There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only 3 states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9
SiriusXM, one of our favorites. I love it, and the sound of little island Christmas that might make Joe Applebaum think that he's over at Aqueduct, where the Jamaicans hanging over the rails, giving Jose Santos the business. That's what it makes me think of. Joe Applebaum, good morning. Where's our man? No Joe yet. Okay. All right. Well, good. We are, as you can hear, we've had now, we've had 3 days with rolling into the holiday season. And we are, as I explained to you a few weeks ago, the music situation has gotten tenuous because of the, you know, the pod delivery, you know, so we're trying to work our music back in, and certainly we can't. You know, we can't go through the holiday season without playing our Christmas music. We honestly have got the greatest collection of Christmas music anywhere. I would rival the network, actually. I there's things that we play that nobody's heard. You know, I talked to Pete the other day. Pete was at, in fact, I was going to try to get him on yesterday, but we were so stacked. We didn't get a chance to slip him in, but he and I were talking about getting a new Christmas special together. So maybe we'll try to, we'll see. We'll see if we have time to do it. Joe Applebaum is with us now. Joe, good morning.
Steve, how you doing?
I'm good. You were on our mind yesterday because we had Pat McKenna live from the halls of the state legislature. There was plenty going on in Tucson, Joe, that kept us busy and that I'm sure has kept you up nights reading 150-page PDFs.
So, it's up to 175 now, Steve, but who's counting?
I've stopped printing out the iterations, Joe. I've used enough ink and paper at this point.
Yes, trust me, I understand. You know, the last time I was in Tucson, it actually snowed, so it kind of reminded me of Albany.
Well, that's right, because I came home last night, and the not a lot of snow, but we got our first official dusting. I would say I'd call this was there. There's a couple of inches out there, just enough to remind us where we live, essentially. But it's funny because Rick Hammerly was talking about the is off air actually the mountain range and how literally half an hour up the side of a mountain and outside of Tucson and you got snow caps.
Yeah, I actually took my kids up to the Biosphere 2, which was like some crazy experimental living situation from the 70s that you can tour. And on the way back down the mountain, it snowed on me. Wasn't prepared for that. I got to be honest.
That's pretty funny. Well, we were in. Was it two? I think it was. Was it maybe three NHCs ago in Vegas, and there were snow flurries.
No.
Crazy.
Yeah,
craziness.
It's that time of year. It's that time of year. And speaking of which, winter racing, opening day today at Aqueduct.
Technically, that's right. The new meet starts. Just a brief, couple of weeks before a little bit of a holiday freshening for everybody. So that is in the offing, and certainly coming off of a terrific fall season. You know, there's so much focus on Saratoga, and in fact, Joe, there's so much focus on Saratoga that there's some members of the state legislature that think that's the only racing in New York.
Well, we don't need to bring that up, Steve. The sad news is how misinformed some people can be about our sport. And even to the fact of going on the radio without having all the facts at their disposal. The good news is that the chairs of the racing and wagering committees in both the Assembly and the Senate are well informed. So that's a piece of solace for us.
Well, let's talk about yesterday. We'll get to HISA and the NYTHA thought. Where you stand right now? We certainly had an enlightening couple of days in Tucson, and we'll swing around to that. But I talked to Pat yesterday. He provided kind of the backdrop and the preview. It does feel, Joe, like there's people that need reassurance. I mean, we bring this up and discuss it much like we've done in Pennsylvania. Because, here's breeding season around the corner and people see these ominous headlines and sensationalized, saber rattling and they worry and wonder about, dropping their foals and their long-term plans. I mean, talk about what was presented yesterday and the landscape, the way you view it, right now in Albany and throughout the state.
Right, so let's talk about that. I think sensational is the right way to put it. And I have a number of friends in central Kentucky who are planning on sending broodmares up here and received a number of calls over the last few weeks. Is it okay? Are the awards still going to be there? Are the purse levels still going to be the same? And I assure them that they are, right? So, any lawmaker can drop a bill. it's not that hard, it doesn't mean it's going anywhere. Number one. Number two, the landscape is actually pretty strong. We came out of, COVID was a massive struggle, as it was for many tracks, but especially here in New York, because we were the original epicenter of the pandemic. We had to shut down for a number of weeks, but we've come out of it in many ways stronger than ever. The interest that we've received for our product, mostly through online wagering, has been incredibly strong. I think a lot of the changes we've made on small business and ways we can help you has attracted more people. So we're seeing, this is kind of a virtuous cycle, we're seeing increased field size, increased handle, better purses, et cetera, and that tends to feed off itself. Like you were saying, we had an amazing fall meet. Granted, some of that's weather-related. We've had particularly lovely fall weather here in New York. But that's also due to the work that our horsemen do and NYRA does, and we've been working hard on this. And the fall meet is something that's kind of languished in the last few years under the onslaught of mighty football. But it was good to see it rebound. And, you know, we take a little extra time off now after Saratoga. I think that helps. And it's been really good. So the landscape is strong. And everything we're talking about, and actually the point of the hearing yesterday was to talk about small business regulation and how that affects horse racing. So one of the things we did is we brought in some small business people. We brought in Scott Alschwade, who's a veterinarian who moved from Lexington to Saratoga to set up a practice with Root and Riddle. We brought in Blue Chip Farm, one of our standard bred compatriots, one of the leading breeders in that game, who has 700 acres here in New York State. We brought in Jim and Tina Bond, trainer, breeders, farm owners, to let them understand what the small business community is all about within our game, and also to let them know some of the advancements we've made, bringing down work comp costs 40% over the last 5 years, getting trainers eligible for health insurance. So it's made New York a lot more attractive place for people to do business. And that's good for everybody. It's good for our business. It's good for the state's business. It's good for the local businesses around Elmont and Aqueduct and Saratoga that support horse racing.
Hey, Joe, we know the specific supporters that whose names come up, and it was Gary Pretlow, who has been a tireless supporter of mm-hmm. racing interests, oh my gosh! I'm gonna the counterpart in the
Joe Addabbo.
Joe Addabbo. Thank you. In the on the other side, in the Pretlow's the assembly, right? And
yes.
Okay. Obviously, it's great to have leadership positions that are championing the cause. One thing that has not come up too quickly here in lieu of the departure of Andrew Cuomo is Governor Hochul. What do we know about her and her feelings toward racing interests?
Well, I'll let the governor speak for herself. But I think it's certainly an encouraging sign that she came to Saratoga within 10 days of her assuming office. I think, she has been governing as a kind of reasonable Democrat, a moderate Democrat, maybe a little more progressive on social issues and more business-oriented on economic issues. And I think that plays right into our message, quite frankly. We're a driver of economic opportunity throughout the state, both in rural communities and in urban ones. And I think that's something she appreciates, or at least I hope she does. And, so far, the signals have been positive. You know, I think one of the things we all have to remember, too, is while racing is extremely important to all of us, you know, in a state like New York, there's a lot of other things going on that governors need to focus on, too.
No, understood. But it's nice and it's advantageous to have, somebody who's not an enemy.
One of the 100%. I wouldn't characterize it that in any way at all. I think so far all the signs have been positive.
You know what one of the crazy ironies of the whole Cuomo saga is that he started out as an enemy, and by the time he left office, it really had become apparent that he had moderated his position about racing, and that which is funny that was one area that, you know, it used to be a constant loggerheads with him in his office, and then after however many years, he really had come to understand the value of it as a economic driver, and as a social, you know, as a social constant and focus, you know, and a positive.
To pat ourselves on the back, but I think both NYSA, the breeders, and NYRA worked tirelessly to kind of bring down some of those barriers and to educate. It's really his staff, right? Most of this is played out at the staff level and now Governor Hochul's staff. So we work tirelessly to educate and to get people to understand. As I constantly refer, it's not just a sport of guys in seersucker suits.
Well, I advocate.
Not that
all
there's anything wrong. I know, Steve, there's nothing wrong with wearing a nice seersucker. I know you have a taste for that.
Well, I have the good sense to wear it one time a summer. You are
that's
only.
That's when we know Siaka's going to win a race at Saratoga when you got the seersucker off, right?
Well, it was easy. It was easy this year. It was the first day of the meet and the last day of the meet.
You
could set a watch by Gary that way, and then opening day at Belmont of all things, and then opening day at Aqueduct. It's very funny. Gary gets him out of the way in a hurry. How about the steak win on Sunday to close the meet with lobster?
He's one of the great mid-shot and long-shot trainers that there are. But I think the key here is for the aspiring handicappers out there. You know, a lot of guys like to watch the horses in the paddock and how do they look and what does their coat look like. But maybe Maggie should be doing a report on what the trainers and owners are wearing for the race. It might signal more intent than the horse's flesh tone.
Well, there was no easier read than Dominic Galluccio showing up in fawn yellow or resplendent in lavender.
That's exactly right.
Right, or fire engine red. Oh, God, tremendously missed. Joe, you were quoted as I saw in Tom Precious's piece that, and this is an area that makes me nuts, it is the mischaracterization, the constant abuse by, really it's laziness, essentially, by journalists to identify, anything in terms of financial, tiff and things that are by statute and previous agreement, are statutory payments that are part of the franchise agreement that benefited the state as much as it benefited the association and racing interests, and yet we continue to have to correct and try to beat back the characterization of the financial portions of the gaming. What's your advice here to try to once and for all put that message and get it into people's heads or get it into journalists' heads?
Here's the advice. You're never going to put it to bed. it's always going to be an issue. You're always going to have to fight. That's part of the public forum, right? That's part of the way we do business, how our governments operate, that there's a public airing of these things. We have to constantly educate people as to, A, the genesis of how this came about, right, and how this was all a grand bargain hacked out. And yes, the legislature has a lot of power over this. But just like you said before, if we want to encourage people to do business in New York State, we need to give them certainty. They need to know that money's right. Not going to disappear. Number two, okay, or B, whichever, right, is the practicality of the issue. I like to talk about this a lot. When Nassau County OTB was authorized to get 1,500 slot machines, or VLTs, sorry, they literally could not find a town in Nassau County that would take them. Not one, right? Not one town wanted a VLT parlor in their town. So what did they do? They bolted them on to the casino at Aqueduct. Okay, good solution. We already have gaming there. So when people talk about horse racing and its connection, we are a vehicle to the state reaping billions, that's billions with a B, billions every year for education, for social programming, for whatever they want to spend on, by the nature that we allow them to easily site these gaming establishments. It wouldn't occur. You couldn't get them sited in other locations without the kind of grandfathered nature of gambling on a horse racing site. How can you complain? There's slot machines. They already are gambling there, right? But people don't want casinos in their community, quite frankly. And we serve that purpose. And for that purpose, we take a very small percent of the action. It seems like a very reasonable trade to me.
Not to mention what the benefit in terms of the franchise agreement, what the benefit the state received for the opportunity the to account, manage the properties.
Steve, the purse account serves as an engine for job creation and social programming within our community, within our worker community, which is largely immigrant and largely people of color, largely working class. There's very, very few funding flows in New York that benefit that working group, right? There's just not a lot of jobs left for working people in downstate New York, and this all flows out of this kind of giant engine of the purse account.
We
don't get into much social justice economics here on at the races, but this is the fact of the matter here in New
York. Without a doubt, the racetrack is a safety net. To be honest, there's anybody that's looking for work that comes through the gate. There's a job for any single person that wants to. You know, it may be at the end of the shank. It might be at the end of a rake, but it's a job, and in a lot of cases, it can be a home. We could bring in Roberto Chavez and Nick Karras, and not only would they tell the story of you know countless people that have taken the opportunity to. Start their lives in the United States that way. You also, frankly, Joe, can fold in people who are trying to rebuild their lives from addiction and other life setbacks. The racetrack serves a very valuable social function, and those of us that are around it appreciate it. It's sometimes hard to. To make others understand.
I couldn't agree more. So, you want to tie it into your other subject? Because I don't know that think they're related, but they are.
No, they're related. There is a linchpin and a segue, which is, of course, that, you know, this scheduled hearing in Albany, you know, came 48 hours after the news from California. And, you know, when it comes to the health and safety wherefores, that was part and was on people's minds. But meanwhile, in Tucson on Tuesday, Team HISA was presenting. I'd love to be able to say they were presenting their case, but they weren't presenting their case. They were presenting basically the same platitudes that have been presented thus far without anything other than a framework. Where is NYTHA on this, Joe? And Alan Foreman was with us. So, I mean, Alan seems unnerved by what has transpired.
Well, let me set a couple things straight. The first thing is that we need to talk about the health and safety and welfare of our horses even more so than we're doing now. Okay? Why? And some people who've been in this game a long time are probably rolling their eyes because they're saying we do more now than we did 10 years ago, than we did 20 years ago, certainly than we did 50 years ago, right? But it's still not enough. Let me explain why. In current society, we're given a social license to race our horses, not an actual license, a social license. And if we're not deemed to be good guardians of their health and welfare, that license is going to go away. First, with less money, and then with less racing. And we need to understand that. Everyone needs to understand that. I'll give you an example. In New York, we're one of the nation's leaders with a low breakdown rate, about 1.2, down about 65% from 10 years ago. We need to lower that again. The national breakdown rate's about, 1.2 per thousand starts.
Right.
Sorry. National rate's shade under 1.5. That needs to be cut in half. There's a lot of work, a lot of expense, a lot of time, a lot of money that's going to go. That is the only thing that really matters. We can talk about doping scandals and this and that. The thing that gives us license is that the horses are treated right, and that they live well and don't break down. And we need to be a world leader in this. I can't say it enough. We can't do enough. And the fact of the matter is that HISA is the law. It's coming in. Now, whether Rule 13.6.7, and I'm making that up, says the withdrawal time is 48 hours a week, 10 days, we can argue about that, but it's coming. And quite frankly, we all need it to be successful. We need it to be successful because we need to lower our breakdown rates. Now, Alan and I share a lot of trepidation, and most of that trepidation is built around a word none of one's talked about for 10 years as our industry's debated this, and everyone wants to talk about the rules, and this is implementation. That is where this is going to be successful or not. And quite frankly, we all need it to be successful. So I think it's important when guys like Alan or I, or quite frankly, the Racetrack Safety Coalition or even the Jockey Club, when they comment on the rules, right, most of what we're commenting on are whether or not this can be actually implemented. What's the best way to implement it? Is that implementation cost effective? But this is everything. The implementation is so much more difficult and so much more tricky than the rule writing. And that's something we really just haven't talked about. So as the rules get rolled out, it's important to understand them as they're not just rules on paper, they're rules that someone is going to actually have to implement and operationalize, and that's difficult. That's hard. So when you want to know what our trepidation is, that's where the trepidation comes from.
It,
I haven't silenced the great Steve Vick, have I?
Well, there's about a half a dozen directions I could go here. What is your feeling toward how this can be successfully implemented if, in fact, it goes through as, you know, as passed, no matter how, you know, no matter how
sure
that came about?
So there's a couple things. One, I think, and you started to see this signal from Heise already this week, is the phased-in approach. Okay? That's important from my perspective. And they already announced that they're going to let the Gaming Commission still do most of the testing through the end of the next year, and USADA is going to come in just doing out of competition at first. And it's so that's a great signal that they're getting their head around this and their arms around this and understanding that. So I think that's first and foremost. Number two, and this has been a big area of concern, is developing relationships with the current commissions who, in the design of Heise, are going to be asked to carry out a lot of the on-the-ground work still, right? With Heise and USADA overseeing it and making sure we're living to standard. But I think that there needs to be a tremendous amount of more work done to forge better relationships with the commissions, to get better feedback from those commissions, because they're the guys who actually have a lot of the operational knowledge right now, right?
Yeah.
And three, you know, the one that's the bugaboo for everyone, but I think is also extremely important, is to be incredibly transparent about cost structure and rate structure and who's paying for what and what we're paying for and why are we paying for it and et cetera, et cetera. So those would be the three areas that I think from an operational standpoint you would want to address. I mean, there's literally dozens of other areas, but big three thematic themes, I think that's what you're looking at.
Well, and how are you presenting it to the horsemen and to the owners, Joe, in regards to specifically to the potential cost? I mean, what are we supposed to say to anybody when they haven't come up with
yet? So no. We're working on it. We're lobbying. We're doing what the organizations do. This is part of the process. It's part of the regulatory game. You appeal first to the Heise authority. We work with them. We've had a lot of feedback with them. They've actually been quite receptive to the feedback. They made some changes. They haven't made others. This is all part of the game, you know. And then eventually, they've released some of the rules. It seems like the safety stuff is pretty solidified. It seems like medication is not done yet, but they're working on it. I assume, pay scale and stuff like that will come after that. But you work with them, you give them feedback, you applaud the things you like, you criticize the things you don't. This is, you know, all part of doing business, just like we would do, quite frankly, at a state regulatory level. It'll all go to the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission. The process was designed for them to be the arbiter or approver of the rules, not just this first time, but almost on an annual basis, because we all know rules need to be updated and approved. So this is what we do. We try to keep our members informed. Some people enjoy my letters. Some don't. We keep all our lobbyists and our partners at other horsemen's groups in the loop, and we talk a lot and prod and cajole, and that's what you do.
Well, then you sound like you're quite willing and cooperative going forward for now.
I don't know what other choice you have, right? Mm-hmm. I think this sort of effort is critical. I think I want to be giving constructive criticism. I think that's the right way. And we want it to be as good as it can possibly be. And I don't see what other choice. The status quo is not tenable, right? This is, at least currently, unless the federal court says differently, this is the law of the land right now. The FTC is going forward, so we can put our head in the sand. You can pretend it's not happening. You can have a temper tantrum if you don't like it. But, if you're not involved in the process, you're not going to have any say whatsoever. So, you need to participate. This is the sausage making that goes into democracy.
It doesn't feel that's an interesting choice of words, Joe, because it certainly doesn't feel like there was a democratic process in the way in which this thing was crafted and then slapped into the omnibus bill, where where all the inputs that had been promised evaporated.
I understand the criticisms. It's not my job to defend the bill. It's not right. It's my job to advocate for our people. And I think what I see is that we need to be more rigorous, more safety oriented across the board. And if it's not this, what's the alternative? And I haven't heard anyone come up with an alternative. So this is the process that Congress has given us. So we got to make the best of it. Like, what other choice do you have?
The ever practical Joe Applebaum.
That's good. That's good. Half the people think that's a compliment. Even half the people think you're cursing me. That's good.
One thing before we go, Joe, nice enough to join us. J.A. Goods for all of you on Twitter. If you aren't following Joe, who has done a tremendous job having to bring NYTHA forward after the passing of Rick Violette. And Joe, from a off the hook standpoint, some thoughts here as the season winds down. What are you looking forward to in the winter? You got consignments coming up in February, March, April?
Yeah, we'll be selling actually March and April. For the last, I don't know, 6 or so years, we've really confined ourselves to April. But we have a few more horses this year, so we're going to be going to OBS March 2. We think we got a pretty good group right now. It's just December. So the horses are really just, still feeling themselves out. But it's probably one of our strongest groups we've had in a long time. The market has been a little crazy. It was COVID-stricken last year and kind of roaring back this year, but not roaring back for everybody, roaring back for, the same bifurcation trend we've seen, where everyone's on the same few horses and a lot are left otherwise. And it's kind of a structural problem I think we need to solve, Steve, because, we need more owners. We need more people participating. If we don't give them the appropriate price points, an appropriate experience, really, to make it enjoyable for them, we need more owners. That's if anything's confronting horse racing outside of welfare issues, it's that. It's we need more owners.
More owners and more players, Joe.
I find many of them are one and the same, Steve. I know if you follow too many people on Twitter, you think there's these ridiculous divides between owners and players, and almost every owner I know is a major player too. There's very few significant owners I know who aren't betting their faces off as well. So I agree. I come from that world. I grew up, I grew up in the backyard at Belmont in Saratoga. betting my face off with all my friends. So we just have to make the game attractive to our customers. And I think you've identified those two groups.
Well, and speaking of the backyard, have you been to the arena yet?
I do forlornly walk around what remains of the backyard at Belmont, and Naira's done the best they can to kind of straighten that out, and hopefully Dave will be making some announcements soon about things going on there. But I've not been inside. People don't hold it against me. I'm not much of a hockey fan.
Well, and Dave actually, in part of that presentation on Tuesday, Dave, along with Shannon Arvin and Craig Fravel,
Josh Rubenstein was
Josh
there.
Rubenstein, thank you, from Del Mar, and of course, Charlie Hayward was moderating, but there were a few more in dribs and drabs. Dave O'Rourke is giving out the further hints about the renovation at Belmont, and looking forward to the full-fledged plan.
Look, I think one of the themes, you could have me on here for hours talking about this, but one of the themes I think we've all come to understand is the underinvestment in the game. So seeing, fingers crossed, hopefully going forward, but we're woefully underinvested in our facilities and our technology, which now our technology, which had been ahead of the other sports 20 years ago, now trails these sports in terms of data collection and analysis, in terms of timing of races, in terms of wagering products, and certainly our facilities need a big upgrade. And I think you've seen the results of that in Saratoga, either 1863 Club or down on the other end, the top of the stretch area. These sort of investments are paying dividends. And quite honestly, in a modern sports entertainment environment, this is what people want, right? They don't want to sit in a rickety seat and get a splinter in the tush. They won't, they want a good screen in front of them. They want to be able to order food. This is the world we're competing in. We don't have a monopoly on gambling, and we need to invest. We need to invest in our facilities and our people and our technology, and you just haven't seen that. This is nationwide. Naira does more investment than anyone, but you just don't see that, mostly because, let's be honest, most of the racetracks are owned by casino companies that are interested in the casino, but not so interested in racing. That's just a means to the end for them.
Well, Joe, I've got Pat Cummings is going to join us, and Pat will echo a lot of those sentiments in terms of investment strategy and investing for the future on all those arenas.
I hope you guys are going to go deep on disqualification rules.
I want to get the follow-up from Tuesday's visit with Pat regarding, particularly between the fixed odds discussion yesterday, which I was on the air live, so I couldn't sit in. So I want to get...
That's not really a fair observer, is it? Pat has a very strong opinion on that.
He does. But Pat can weigh in without rancor or, without bias.
Fair enough.
Look, Joe Applebaum.
Pat spent time in Australia, which very few of us have, and I think it's great because it's a whole other perspective. We'll see if it's successful or not, but it's a whole new world out there, and we got to be prepared for it.
Without a doubt. And Joe Applebaum from the New York Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association from yesterday's legislative session hearing, and with some encouraging or at least supportive thoughts regarding Heisa. Joe, thank you so much.
My pleasure, Steve. Anytime. It's always good to talk horse racing with people who care.
Well, appreciate it. Joe Applebaum, folks, and we'll stay right here because Pat is, in fact, waiting for us. Pat, I think I said earlier, languishing in Tucson and taking in maybe some of Tucson's sights and pleasures. Pat, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. And to Joe's point earlier, I have stayed around for some extra sausage-making observation. With today's ARCI Model Rules Committee meeting, which is always a jovial, cordial, fun watch. I am only being slightly sarcastic. It can really get into the weeds. And frankly, more people should see it and attend, but it's an interesting session, and I'm sticking around for that today. And, you know, relative to those things, like Joe was mentioning, the disqualification interference policies and things like that, these are the sorts of things that do get discussed from time to time. And as I alluded to on Tuesday, I think there is some movement afoot in some other places in the country that we could see some positive momentum there in the next couple months.
I wanted to, and we'll talk to Nick tomorrow, but the conversation that the two of you engaged in with me on Tuesday was really well received and important to get the subsequent viewpoint. We anticipated some of these sessions. Talk a little bit about that fixed odds session yesterday, Pat, that was going to be very closely examined.
So the only session I missed in person the entire 2 days was the very first one when I was on air with you, Steve, when Tom Rooney was speaking. But I can tell you this, in terms of attention from the audience and the actual number of attendees for the symposium, it was undoubtedly the most highly attended session. The ballroom was full, and I think that does go to tell you everything you need to know about how this opportunity is being viewed. And that doesn't mean that everyone in the room is sitting there saying this is going to be the greatest thing since sliced bread. But to listen to both Dallas Baker and Simon Fraser. I think more people know Dallas's name in the last few months talking about fixed odds, but Simon is a senior vice president with XBNet, which is part of the First family. And as Simon said very straight up yesterday, there's a heck of a lot of fixed odds betting in American racing, and it's been going on for a long time. It's just not happening with American customers. And Simon's role within First and XBNet is to sell American racing to overseas fixed odds providers. So there is already a market for this, and it is being served. It's just not happening with American customers because of all of the legal wranglings in the state by state. And so it is coming around to it. So I can say that you know, we do have some element of that on our racing already. And I think Simon kind of opened a few eyes to some of the horsemen's groups that were in attendance, Dallas as well, to really make it clear how much of a market truly exists for this and what the opportunities are. I think some fears were addressed by both of those gentlemen that a lot of players share. I think it's something that we've discussed in the past, Steve, which is that there is a fear. And it's a little bit of a self-serving, you know, backslapping fear that winners are going to be shut out. That if you are successful at fixed odds betting, you will not be able to get continued bets down. And look, within reason, winners have been getting shut down in fixed odds betting on anything, whether it's through legal or illegal channels, forever. But what Dallas identified, and I think Simon re-upped, is that there is a recognition that you still do need to let business and commerce take place, And Dallas cited the Australian policies where there are minimum bet requirements that in order to take fixed odds bets on racing in the major metropolitan tracks in Australia, there's a different limit on the smaller tracks, but you have to allow customers to get on to at least win, I think it's $2,000. And everyone has to allow customers on at least up to that amount. This cannot be a game where you are totally shutting out your customers. You need them to be engaged, and that is good for business. People who are overmanaging their books to that degree, they're just not going to be successful. And I think that allayed a couple fears of horse players in the room. Eric Hamelbeck, your friend and mine, was well represented on the panel talking about the horseman's perspective. And I sat behind Eric for a couple sessions and caught his ad hoc remarks to a couple different sessions, HISA related, and certainly his on the mic remarks on this. And Eric's take has long been that this needs to fall under the boundaries of the Interstate Horse Racing Act, and no one can try and circumvent that. That is protection for the horsemen. And I think there is every recognition that the horsemen clearly need something, deserve it, and it is protected by law. And I don't think anyone walked out of that room thinking that in some way, shape, or form, the horsemen are not going to get a cut, or that the Interstate Horse Racing Act is going to be circumvented. No way, no shape, no how. And kudos to Eric for continuing to push that perspective, which is very much needed. There was another very interesting topic that was shared by Bill Knopf from Monmouth Park in the session, of course, at the forefront of the sports betting legalization and the fixed odds on racing. And this does get into the weeds a little bit, but it does go to show you why horse racing in New Jersey just hasn't turned on the faucet. Again, it gets into the really nitty-gritty details of what is required, but the most important point has been that you had to take steps to ensure that a racing bet at fixed odds is treated from a tax standpoint as a racing bet and not a sports bet.
Right.
The taxation structure is completely different. Bill highlighted the extreme importance of that. Dallas certainly agreed in terms of all the work they've done in New Jersey on this. And the key takeaway is, we could have sped through this and really forced the issue and ended up with a very substandard product offering. They haven't done that. They've taken their time. They've worked between the Division of Gaming Enforcement and the New Jersey Racing Commission to try and get the best possible outcome. And I think we're getting to that point. And Bill has made it very clear, 2022 Monmouth season coming up, it will be fully on. And simulcasting too, right? There will be monitors throughout the facility at Monmouth. Some will be fixed, some will be paramutual. Their tote board, their new video board will be completely changed. There will be one side for fixed, one side for paramutual. They've opened up the bring your own bottle back to Monmouth. So bring the boys along and have a party for the day. A lot of optimism. With the cautions, right, from Eric and all very well understood. And one other panelist up there at the time was Dan Hartman, who's the director of gaming for the Colorado Department of Revenue. And Dan oversees all of vice, basically, in Colorado, medical marijuana, liquor, alcohol sales, and gaming. And Colorado is looking to move down the fixed odds for racing road as well. And it was very clearly discussed what ping pong in Colorado as a bet, why ping pong is so popular. And it's the number of events, and they're excited to bring racing to the menus of Colorado bettors. But again, doing it right, taking your time. Everyone, I think, really does want to get it right. They don't want to just hurry and force the issue. So it was a very optimistic session, very positive. All the caveats, I think, really got an airing. And I think a lot of people walked out of the room hopeful. And at the end of the day, this isn't just about fixed odds, but it's about the competition that will be brought into the space, Steve, and hopefully help evolve parimutuel wagering too.
Pat, explain maybe, because I know that it came up. In fact, even Sid referenced it. Explain the critical mass on this. And from a mechanical standpoint, you know, one of the topics that came up was laying off, you know, how those, you know, how the bet, you know, the bookers, the people that are going to, you know, that are going to lock in the prices, how they leverage and that they would utilize potentially the parimutuel side. How does that work, and what's the liquidity overall in here in terms of critical mass? Because that you know, certainly when you look back at Jersey's experiment
Exchange wagering.
They just never had the amount of players to match up with. You know, they just didn't get critical mass. How do you see this unfolding from that standpoint?
It was definitely addressed in the session that exchange wagering failed because, like you said, they did not get enough customers, enough liquidity. Exchange requires a bettor on one side who wants to offer a price and someone on the other side who wants to take it. And it just did not have enough liquidity to really bring in the big players and to create the critical mass and to get the other tracks to do contracts to be involved in it. And in fixed odds betting, you're wiping that out and you're saying the house is going to accept the risk and manage their liabilities. And in doing so, you know, they fully acknowledged, and there was a discussion. Someone asked a question: give me a 24 hours before a race is run. What does it look like for a fixed odds bookmaker? What is that process going to look like? And Simon Fraser and Dallas Baker, I think, kind of walked through this very well, which is that once the entries are drawn, within an hour or two, a bookmaker is going to put up prices for that race. So it could be, you know, the Travers. It's drawn Wednesday morning, let's say. They can have a lineup with the confirmed fields and trainers very soon after the race. Someone will put a price up, and as Dallas said, pretty much all of the other books will then follow. Once one person posts prices, then everyone else is going to do it. But liquidity in those early hours, meaning the amount of money that is going to be taken as bets, is typically very small. The market needs to form and get a little bit more reflective of reality. You know, someone could come in and place a $100 bet on a horse that is initially posted at 20-1. That's going to change the market because you're still, you know, maybe 72 hours, 96 hours out in advance of a race. So that early action is typically very small. But as you get closer to the race, particularly within the last hour, that market will change. And the bets that the fixed odds bookmakers will take typically increase. The bet limits will typically go up. And every bookmaker, and I'm not doing this as much justice as Dallas would. I'm just not doing it in an Australian accent here, Steve. But and then you're welcome. The fixed odds bookmakers choose to manage their liabilities in a variety of different ways. They may want to be better priced on the favorite who might be looking 2-1 in some places, and they want to take more action on that horse. They're going to offer 5-2. And if they take a whole bunch of action, 5-2, they're going to drop it back down to 2-1. And if things get a little out of whack, there's nothing that stops the bookmakers from betting on those same horses parimutuelly to cover some of their liability. And there is, you know, all of the discussion and fear is about how the win, place, and show pools could be cannibalized by customers going to the fixed markets instead of the tote markets. And those fears, while there are certainly some founding and some reasons to think that there will be shifts, don't necessarily take into account that the fixed odds bookmakers themselves are now going to be players in the parimutuel pools too. And so that was also discussed reasonably, I think. You know, look, I said this on Tuesday to you, Steve. I do feel that, and Joe alluded to it. Yeah, I've been a longtime supporter of fixed odds for racing because I think it's good to have diverse options, meet customers where they are. But I'm not a fixed odds or bust, you know, that, you know, that protections aren't needed, that customers shouldn't be limited to outrageous degrees. I believe in the free market. And I believe that our sport can take full advantage of this. There was one statistic that was very interesting. Andrew Moore from TVG, Paddy Power, FanDuel, et cetera, put up a stat in one of the later sessions talking about sports betting. He said that FanDuel's New Jersey sports betting platform has had more active users in the last year than TVG across the country has had in the last 22 years. That in one state, one bookmaker has done more, has had more active users in that 12-month period than 22 years of action across America in 35 states or so. I think there's a lot of recognition that this is going to happen in some more places than others, perhaps faster than some people may have thought. Other states are queuing up. I talked to two members of commissions, directors of commissions, who are investigating this more actively, not from Colorado, mind you, from other states, who are starting to look into this and think about ways in which they're going to be involved and their states are going to be involved. And I think everyone would tell you that, you know, sports betting is, yes, it's becoming ubiquitous. There's still a lot of room to grow, but things have happened faster than, and that growth has happened faster than a lot of people have realized. And there is a need to put racing adjacent to a lot of other sports and get us on that platform.
And from what we can tell, that was actually one of the messages Tom Rooney was driving home. Mm. And we know that, you know, from work in New York, that actually from the first, you know, the first missives on the mobile sports betting front, there wasn't going to be room for racing. Now there, it appears there is. So it feels like that, you know, and obviously, Pat, that's a minor skirmish, maybe not a minor skirmish. Let's call it an early skirmish in what's got to be a long, you know, a long battle and a long-term series of strategies to work alongside and you know, make racing as appealing as possible as a yeah, wagering entity.
You know who addressed that really well, I thought, was Eric Hallstrom from Indiana Grand, who has done a great job there in his first year and a half or so. Mm-hmm. And he was speaking on a panel. It was a panel that was focused mostly on things that have happened since COVID and how you adjusted things in right, your business and whatnot. But Eric said, speaking about sports betting, he said, The single best producing sports betting site in their network is the sports betting outlet in a strip mall in Clarksville, Indiana, 2 miles across from Louisville. And he said, you know, it's a very nice facility. I've been there with old Marty McGee playing some track on a Tuesday afternoon derby week 1 year. It's a different place now. And he said it is the best performing outlet in their entire, in their OTB network, because it's also a sports betting outlet. And, you know, Kentucky's, you know, that is their prime outlet. And I have to say, I sent that fact off to Chairman Adam Koenig in the Kentucky Assembly. And you know, he was thankful for the tip off, because it is an ongoing discussion, and that is Kentucky remains behind the curve. It is surrounded by legal sports betting, and what Eric was saying is, not only are people betting on sports, but the actual OTB racing handle is up significantly too. People are not just coming to bet sports; they're coming to bet sports, and they are betting parimutuel racing. And what had long been just a standalone OTB. So there, you know, he was acknowledging the crossover and says it's been great, and I hope Kentucky never gets sports betting, but you know, because it's good for their business at the current time.
No, Pat, I appreciate that. We just got a couple of minutes because I got to get Seth Merrow in here. We want to make a quick walkthrough of this pick six sequence with Seth. The rest of the overall thoughts, what else did you come away with from the sessions?
I'll give you one thing, Steve. And it was the very last session yesterday. It was the only session that pretty much had no racing people on it, and unfortunately it was sparsely attended. But it had both the basically the head ad folks for the University of Arizona Sports Athletic Department and for the Phoenix Suns. And while it was sparsely attended, I thought they offered some tremendous lessons and opportunities for a refocus on some things in racing. But the one gentleman from the Phoenix Suns, I believe his name was Tom Fletcher, said, look, you can never apologize for your product. And there are some people who don't like the NBA. They don't like some of the players. They don't like some of the things that have happened on or off the court. And you know what? If they don't like you, they don't have to spend money with you. But don't focus all of your time and attention trying to appease someone who doesn't like you. You have to make your own product as strong, as relatable for the customers you have and the customers you want, not the people that dislike you. So, you know, I did think a lot of focus from people on you know, the fear of communicating with people who hate racing and who want to end racing. There's all this talk and fretting and gnashing of teeth, and we understand why. But you know, if you're never going to win them over, it just should not be and get as much air as it does in our business. This is horse racing. Horses are finely tuned athletes. They will get injured. You just hope to reduce that at every possible turn. But human athletes do the same. And they're very well looked after. Our horses are very well looked after. Don't apologize for your core business, because that just really gets you off track. I thought that was a great message. I wish more people were there to hear it. And I think it's something that we all need to embrace going forward a little bit more.
Right, 100%. And that's certainly something we've tried to espouse here, and a drum we beat. Chuck and I talk about this. Chuck, he has said too forever, you know, stop trying to win over people that you're not ever going to win over. And even worse than that, trying to win over people that are trying to destroy you.
And I have to tell you this, Steve, and I'll leave you on this and head off to Seth. HKIR, Saturday night, big day of racing. I absolutely love a horse in the Hong Kong Sprint, number 2, Pixie Knight. That's race 5 at Shaw 10 on Sunday. Saturday night, it's going to go off, I don't know, 2, 3 a.m. Race 5, number 2, Pixie Knight. I think he is a sensational up-and-coming sprinter. I think the Hong Kong sprinters are all a bit of a mishmash at the moment. Pixie Knight. It's going to be a big night for Japan.
Well, we talked yesterday, of course, with Dick, and Pixie Knight absolutely came up. And Dick, I thought he likes Nobu Attack. And, you know, there, you talk about the Japanese, there's that, what, Resistencia and...
Resistencia, yep.
But
Danon Smash, who won it last
year. Danon Smash, sure. Hot King Prawn, baby.
Hey, the Hot King Prawn is the first horse in Hong Kong whose Chinese name I learned before I ever saw him race. I was so impressed with him at the trials, and I said, this is going to be a decent horse. What is his Chinese name? What do the Chinese call him? And to me, it was always a sign. If I knew the Chinese name, it was a decent horse, and he turned into one. He's flying under the radar, Steve, so you're going to get a price.
I'm a huge fan, and it's funny because Dick also echoed the same sentiment that you're mentioning, that it's a kind of an amorphic race. There's no real firm form here to latch onto. So don't be afraid to take a flyer either. So all right, Pixie Knight, who's going to wear the 2. Cloth in the 5th, and for those, you know, yesterday we weren't sure about the way the card unfolded. They always do this. They have the 4 races are paired up, so it's the 4th and the 5th, the 7th and the 8th. The Vaz and the Sprint go as the 4th and the 5th. The Mile and the Cup go as the 7th and 8th. So those that are waiting for Love's Only You in the Cup, you'll pretty much.
Yeah, great opportunity to fade her, to be fair, Steve. I think I like the other Japanese runners, Lei Papali and Ishi Iguazu, in the Cup.
Dick had a little affection, too, for Lei Papali, who we will refer to, for our purposes, Pat, as Vince Papali.
There you go. There you go. I love it.
And you know, next time, we don't want your Australian accent. I will take your Delco accent, though.
No, Kate Winslet did it too well. But
yes, she did.
I can't stop Kate Winslet. So.
One of the toughest, they say, for actors and actresses, one of the toughest dialects there is. And so
it
tough
it
that some people
is.
Don't even try to do it.
Yeah, no, it is. It is. Head off to Wawa. Yeah. All right.
Thanks. All right, Hans. I will we'll talk to you. Pat, this was great. Thanks so much.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Pat Cummings, everybody, and standing by, Seth Merrow, who is just a little bit away from going on air, seeing that red blinking light flashing in his face. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I'm sitting in the studio right now looking at the various pregame shows, Naira and Gulfstream. We'll take a look at a little bit of that this afternoon. Tomorrow's fun, though. Tomorrow Nashville comes back down at Oaklawn. I'm looking forward to that, see what he can do off the long layoff.
Andy tweeted about Nashville's return has been away. So, yeah, gearing up for next year, more or less. And any quick observations here before we look at the Naira Pick 6?
Well, in reference to that, I will say, can't give any guarantees on my thoughts here because New York racing over the past couple of weeks has been a little nutsy, but I will, part of that playing out last Sunday, which leads into the carryover. I mean, there's a carryover, but one person hits the pick 5
yeah.
last Sunday for $400,000+, and part of that is, I wanted to toss in, congrats to Gary and Eddie Pizzone, Eddie F's with Lobster, who ran huge. He's out there dueling with stablemate Lobster and Chowda, out there dueling, and then the favorite goes by Lobster in the stretch, and he comes back and wins. So, yeah, congratulations to those guys, and the stakes win at $50-some that helped, you know, make the carryover happen last Sunday down in New York.
That's true. And that sequence starts today in the third race. We got $14,000 non-winners of three. And these are fillies and mares going three quarters. Favorite is Baba. And I wanted to be against Baba, who didn't look all that much better than anybody else. But I don't know. Baba might be okay. And they need to lean a little bit on Baba.
I went there too. I was my thoughts exactly. I was looking, you know, it's Marshall and Ten Strike and Michelle G and Julio, but on the class move, I just thought that horse may have a little too much class. Effie Meister off the last race, I thought might be playable at a little bit of a price. Third start back up, you know, spent the summertime on the sidelines. Now just third start back up, a nice number last time that matches with these. I think Deep Cuts is definitely better than the try we saw up at Finger Lake, so that one maybe scares me a little bit. But yeah, I put Bob on top. 8, 5, 9, and 6 for me.
I'm interested in Effie Meister too for Patty Reynolds coming back on the short rest. That horse of Jeff Engelhart's on the rail, Adeline, is going to be coming late, and Adeline at 8 to 1. I thought is a reasonable, especially if you're not playing the pick six and if you just, you know, want to get a price horse in, you know, in your exotic play. An $8,000 claimer going a mile, 3 and ups. And I've had real trouble with this race. I didn't expect to, but I have.
I went 10, 7, 1, and 5. The 7, you know, morning line favorite on the class drop of the betting public will tilt in that direction, but boy, can you trust the horse up the last two? I put the horse in the mix underneath, but the last two are just horrible, and Wayne Potts hasn't been knocking it dead in New York, certainly, so I took a shot against with Playwright. I'm going to draw a line through the last race. I think the horse is better than that, and if we get back to the two last most recent races at Belmont, I think those are good enough. That's the Blinkers today. Trevor McCarthy on board. I thought that one could be a little bit interesting. Then Ashar, the logical player. Magnetron, back in the Rob Attriss barn, and in that barn at Aqueduct last year, did very well last, you know, going back to early this year. Comes in from Finger Lakes. It's a move that normally I think is negative. I like Naira horses when they show up at Finger Lakes. I think that's a super positive venue move, so I don't look it the other way. But I will alert people at this time of year, with the level of racing, the Finger Lakes shippers can make a little noise down at Aqueduct. So for me in the fourth, I have a 10, 7, 1, and 5.
I'll mention the 9 in here. I'm sure I'm going to use. I still have to finish filling out my grids and things, which I'll do right after the show. We've got to kind of put the spurs to it real quick at this point, Seth. Third leg, maiden 40.
11, 9, and 3. The Jeremiah horse has a sibling called Let's Work Out that won its career debut. I think Gormley is a nice first out sire. So I put Bestrida on top. Angie at the office comes up to try New York Reds from out of town, and I think could be live moving into the Tony Dutrow barn. And Classic Mist has a little bit of win early breeding and maybe starts to live up to that with the movement against claimers. 11, 9, 3.
The optional claimer, second level. This is a good race. Oksana, your 6-5 favorite.
Yeah, I didn't get past her. I went 2, 6, 3, and 4, put Oksana on top. But I thought Bold Confection may be a little bit interesting coming in from out of town off a couple of wins, so I could make the argument there. And the Ray Handel horse might be interesting.
Yeah, I like the Ray. Dealing Justice, the 3, absolutely. And the late double, we got a 25 claimer. This is actually a fun betting race because there's some decent prices, and then a state bred allowance, fillies and mares. Your late double, quick.
5, 6, 9, and 7. I have the Eddie F. horse in the mix from Gary, but I put Raven Rocks on top. That's just a class move I love and have loved for years now. State bred allowance into an open claim or an open conditional claim even better, so I couldn't get past Raven Rocks. 5, 6, 9, and 7. And in the finale, I went 2, 8, 3, and 4. I think OK Honey at 5-1 on the morning line.
Yep.
Coming down
That's
from a couple
pick.
Of good tries at Finger Lakes is live. So I went 2, 8, 3, and 4.
That's my pick, too. Okay, honey. Seth Merrow, everybody. Watch for him shortly on Capital OTB TV. And, Seth, we will talk next week. I appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Good luck to everybody.
Seth Merrow, folks, let's wrap up, send you out into the race day. I'll get this put up as quickly as I can. My little fingers can type. Thanks to Sid Fernando with the excellent hour. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill & Dale. Joe Applebaum from the New York Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association, and appreciate Joe's frank comments. Pat Cummings out still at Tucson, and Seth just now. Weekend preview tomorrow at the races. Join us at 9. If you missed anything, 6 to 9, the replay tomorrow here on the network and archive podcast, etc. Thanks, everybody. Good luck. Let's get something done in this pick six today. I'll talk to you in the morning.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.